Welcome to the Forward with Purpose podcast. Your hosts are Linda Keener Thomas from the National Memorial for the Unborn and Mindy Lefishore from An Even Place Virtual Abortion Healing Groups and Coaching for Pro-Life Ministry Workers. We understand the power of addressing the abortion wound, which then allows us to confidently stand in the gap for the next person. We also understand how lonely and heavy this work can be. This podcast is designed to connect you with other leaders doing this work, to learn from the vast wealth of knowledge and experience that is out there. God has designed you for greater things. God has commissioned you to a precious and sacred place in abortion recovery ministry work. It is our hope you are encouraged and equipped as you move forward with purpose in your ministry. Well, we're so excited to have you here today, Polly. I can't even remember now how I got introduced to you and what you do. I think maybe it was the ARC. Part of ARC, right? Yes, that's probably where I got introduced to you. Maybe you did a presentation on Polly Lunetto Ministries, and I said, "Hey, we got to talk." and in that, so I got to learn a little bit about what you do, and I got to be a recipient of what you do, and was really blessed by that. And I'll share that a little bit later. But I just want to give you the floor to kind of share a little bit about who you are, where you came from, how you got called into this kind of work, and is there a connection there to your story in this work, or how that looks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for the invitation to be on this call. And I'm super excited about it. And man, what a journey. It's been very short, the last 3 years, maybe. And so much has happened so quickly. And I'm just really blessed and honored to steward this ministry that we're offering to women and men and really to everybody in regards to what we have to say, what the message is about through the ministry. But I guess I'll start with my story briefly. I was married at 19, and he was the first. Well, he was a little bit older than me in high school, and I was raised in a very traditional family, pretty strict, and I was not allowed to date in high school. And but that didn't stop me from doing lots of other things that I shouldn't have been doing. but not allowed to date. And so this person that I married, he was a couple of years ahead of me in school. And then after high school, graduated and just started to go out into the world. And so I think I went a little wild. And so we got married at 18. I had my first baby at 19 years old. And that marriage, maybe it lasted maybe a year and a half, and that was about it. It was like, no, this person is not for me. It was pretty evident pretty quickly. And so that marriage ended, and then I was just out kind of in the world, just doing my thing, trying to figure out what independence is, because it felt like, wow, I still lived at home, but yet I was able to, I was working and I was meeting a lot of different people with a lot of different values and different upbringings. It was, all of this unknown. And so after the divorce, I started dating, and I was dating this one particular guy for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, I'm pregnant. And where we grew up, it was, and in our culture too, it was like, if somebody is pregnant unexpectedly, the solution is to get married. And so that was just kind of our culture. And like I said, I wasn't allowed to date in high school. So I was very naive in so many ways. So This person didn't say, well, let's get married, the solution that I thought was going to happen. And no, he didn't want to get married. And I thought, okay, well, I'm already dealing with the father of my daughter, and this is a nightmare. It was very difficult. Being a single parent is very difficult.
And how old
And
was your daughter at this time?
she was probably 4 or 5 years old.
Okay.
And it was hard because I didn't have that support, but yet my parents were always there. My parents were really, my father was her father. He raised her. My brother raised her. We all were a very close family. And so, but there was no financial support. There was, I mean, very seldom did he see her. And when he did see her, there was, things going on that shouldn't be around a child, drinking and, drugs and all that stuff. So, I didn't allow the visitations to take place very often. But so when I realized that this person that I'd been dating for a while didn't want to get married, I didn't know what to do. I wasn't sure how to handle it. I definitely didn't want to disappoint my parents. There was a lot of shame involved being, I was trying to imagine what would it be like if I was pregnant and unmarried. At the time, we would say out of wedlock, pregnant out of wedlock. And I don't know if anybody even uses that word anymore, but that was kind of the our sort of philosophy that, you are married when you have children. And that wasn't the case for me. So I was didn't know what to do. I relied on what I saw in high school. There was this one family and they had all girls. And some one was my age and we were in the same grade in high school, but she had older sisters. And their solution when there was a pregnancy out of wedlock was to have an abortion. And so I thought, oh, well, okay, maybe I can have an abortion. I honestly didn't know anything about it. So I had the abortion. My boyfriend came with me. He paid for it. And I still remember it was $350. And where he got the money, I have no idea. But that was a lot of money back then. And, this is probably in the 80s. Yeah, it was in the 80s. Well, I think a year goes by and we're still dating, and I'm come up pregnant again for the second time. And this time I knew his position, and when I said I'm pregnant again, he's this time he didn't say, no, you're not going to have an abortion. This time he said, well, if you have it, I don't want to get married, but my mom will help us raise it. And I thought, no, that's not going to happen. And so I had a second abortion. And honestly, ladies, I don't remember a whole lot about either one of them. I mean, I could say they happened in the 80s, and I can kind of guess I was in my 20s, but I can't really say for sure what year it was. I can't figure it out. So after I had the abortions, I'm still a single parent and I'm trying to raise my very young daughter. And like I said, I had the support of my parents, but I was different after those abortions. I really checked out and I partied a lot. And so that could be why I don't remember what year things took place, but anyway, that was kind of the story. And I literally kept it a secret. Nobody knew about it. Not one person, except for the doctor and the clinic that I went to. They were the only people that knew, and plus the boyfriend that took me. So then fast forward, I meet my now husband. We're about to get married, and I thought I probably should come clean and just tell him my past and let's see what happens. So I shared with him about the abortions, and he said, "Well, I'm glad you said that. I had an abortion too. My girlfriend in high school had an abortion too. He was 17 years old, and he took his girlfriend to have an abortion, and he paid for it." And so that was that. That conversation probably lasted 5 minutes, and we have been married for 36 years now, and we never once talked about it through our entire marriage. Well, 3 years ago, I had been feeling like the Lord kept the, I call them divine appointments, because these things would happen. And I knew he was calling me to start sharing my story. And I ran from it for years because I was so terrified for anybody to know. And I was so ashamed. And so 3 years ago, he said, "I want you to share your story. And I am an artist." So the way he called me to do it was to write a book. And to use the book as a sort of a an art journal almost. And so I wrote my book. It took me 18 months to write it.
What's the name of
And
your book?
it's called A Choice to Remember. And I wrote that book, and just the process of writing the book alone, which I'd never done before, that was tough. But as I early on in writing the book, I thought, you know, since I'm writing this book, I was just going to share sort of the signpost that kept happening that God was showing me along the way throughout the years. I'm just going to write that. And so as I'm writing, I decided, you know, I should probably check out one of those abortion Bible study things, or those recovery things
I
I
love
had.
how the Lord tricks us into these things,
I'm not
huh?
sure. And throughout the years, I called a couple of times. I called this one organization, and we would have these, you know, long talks. But then I would sign up, but then I would chicken out, and I never went. And so I thought, okay, since I'm writing this book, it probably, you know, I think I probably should go through something like that. So I'll just take those classes real quick, and
Real quick.
you know, and you know, see what happens. At least I could say I went to one of those classes, you know, since I am writing this book. And oh my gosh, ladies, my world was turned upside down. I mean, literally, because I was still not fully understanding what abortion meant. Like, I was so shut down. And, you know, deception is, and denial is very powerful, and it's very handy, you know, when you are looking to hide. And I truly thought that I would go to the grave with that secret. I literally did not want anybody to know, especially my children. And I really wanted to hide that. And so I go through the classes, and God is so good, because he gave me a facilitator that could handle me, because man, I was throwing out every, you know, banana peel possible. You know, I challenged, you know, show me, I want to see it, show me. It was, you know, I thank that facilitator so much. But she was perfect for me. And I came out the other side realizing that not only was it a person, and then not only was it a baby, but that it was my baby. I let them do that to my babies. And that was wild. I mean, I really didn't understand it until that moment. And of course, it took me a while to really process it and understand what it meant.
You
And
know, if I could just ju jump in there, because you make such a good point that I think really, really needs to be stressed is the deception piece. You know, it seems so obvious when you have the light and you have the truth and you are fully accepting of the knowledge of what life is and what abortion is, and you know that life is valuable to God and all these things. But the layer and the thickness of the veil of deception that is on our whole country, because there's pastors that don't believe this, there's pastors that deny that abortion is even hurting people. There's I mean, and I'm kind of picking on pastors because they are our leaders of our churches, right? And how are our churches going to believe if our pastors are not feeding them truth, right?
Yes.
And it's just a veil of deceit. And I know there's people in the church that can clearly see that abortion is bad and evil and wicked and we shouldn't do it, and have that judgment on us for those that commit abortion. And that's what keeps us so quiet, all that shame. But at the same time, they're not understanding the deception piece is so real.
Yes.
And it's spiritual.
Yeah.
Yes.
We know who the deceiver
absolutely.
is.
Yes. Absolutely.
It's thick. It is absolutely thick.
It's like we've been given over to it.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, at one time, I remember early on when I started working with women, and she was telling me her story, and she said that she had an abortion because she was raped. And immediately, you know, I'm still in that process of renewing my mind, right? And so as soon as she said that, immediately I thought, well, yeah, of course you would. And then in a split second, I caught myself and I said, oh my gosh, like it snuck up on me. And I realized, wow, my thinking is still there was deception that was clouding my thinking. And I'm telling you, it scared me because it was like, oh my gosh, when I said the words, oh yeah, okay. It was shocking to me. And I thought, wow, you know, what's in your heart comes out through your mouth. And wow, I really realized, okay, the journey is not over. You know, just because you go through classes and, you know, the journey is not over. There's, there's like this unveiling little by little of all that deceit that we are, you know, really brainwashed to believe.
True. I can totally relate to that, because when I came to work at the pregnancy center, I knew in my mind, in my heart, abortion was wrong. It was bad. It was evil. It shouldn't be done. But I could not articulate why it was wrong in the cases of rape or incest at that time, right? And at that time, I don't even think that when I became involved in the pregnancy center, I don't know that a medically advised abortion was as big on the radar as it is today. But it may have been, I just may not have been paying attention. But it took me time in a pro-life atmosphere to understand those arguments as well, because we're still given over to those arguments, thinking that it's okay in those instances as well. And it's just crazy, the level of deceit and the power of it. You're right. It's very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Yes.
So you got into a group, you went through a group, and now you're growing as a Christian and that kind of thing. So tell us about how you got involved, or how Poly Luneto Ministries got started, and how that all evolved and what you're doing.
Okay.
Because you were already starting to write a book even before you went through group, right? Yeah.
Yes. So I go through that 18-month process of writing the book. And then, you know, then I went through the healing journey, and then, or the Bible study, I should say, because the journey continues. And then after that was done, I was like, whew, wow. Got that over with. Okay, God, got that book out of the way, told my story. But then I had to tell my daughter because even writing that book was a secret. And so I had to tell my daughter, had to tell my son, and I was so afraid. More so with my daughter, because I had her, then I had the abortions. And I knew I was checked out as a mom raising her a lot of the time. So I think I felt the most guilt because of that whole situation. And how could I tell her that? And she's this, an amazing mom to three kids. And how could I tell her that? So anyway, she of course was very loving and very supportive, and, you know, But after I wrote the book, I thought I was done. And then God says, no, this is one stepping stone. And because I'm an artist, I was already accustomed to going to art shows, showing my paintings. And I started getting into the habit as I painted, I would start hearing these stories about the art piece that I was painting. And so I would write down the story. It was more like prose. I would write that down on a card and I would put it next to the painting at the art shows. And people would really connect with it. Sometimes people would come in, and I remember this one instance. It was a mother and daughter, and I knew that there had been some, battles between, moms and daughters. And so they saw this one particular painting, they read the story behind it, and they just started hugging and crying. And I'm so sorry. And this is fabulous. That whole thing. So last year, when God dropped this idea into my heart, I connected with it right away. And what he said was, he showed me this picture of painting an art piece as a response to letters that women wrote to their babies in heaven. And so, writing a letter to your baby in heaven may sound odd to someone, but for a good portion of recovery studies and retreats, we write a letter to our baby in heaven. It's part of the process. It's part of, giving them a name, giving them an identity, acknowledging their personhood, that they're real, that they're ours, and that,
Expressing ourselves, not necessarily that they're going to read that or see
yeah,
it, but
yes.
it's
Thank you for
expressing our
clarifying
heart.
that. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
Therapeutic, very
Yes,
therapeutic.
yes. And it was therapeutic for me because I thought, these babies really are real. They're mine and they're in heaven waiting for me, and Jesus is taking care of them. And so to write that letter, I knew the power of it. And so God dropped this idea into my heart, and I didn't know how it was going to happen. I was on Instagram and I kind of just threw it out there, and some ladies responded. And I thought, wow, that was cool. And so I do the painting and I send it out to them, and it just continued to evolve, and to the point where we went through all the process of making it into a 501c3 and doing all the official things. And it was a good thing for us because it opened the doors to us to a lot of different things and places. And so from there, I'll share with you about what Poly Lunetto Ministries is. So we do, my husband and I, we do everything together. We work with people that are had an abortion in their past, and it seems like we tend to do one-on-ones more so, and we like that. And just because of what we're doing right now, the opportunity to minister individually seems to be a good fit for us right now.
Did your husband go through any kind of healing?
Yes, he did.
Okay, where
Yes, he
did he do?
did. He did the one through Reclaiming Father. Is it Reclaiming Fatherhood with
Yes.
Karenette?
Yes.
Yes, he went
Okay.
through that. He went through that study with a man, and who was fabulous. And so, yeah, we both went through the training through CareNet, and it was fantastic. And my husband got so much out of it. One of the things, I'll just backtrack a little bit, but when I was writing my book, my husband would edit the first drafts. And so everything I read, I mean, everything I wrote, he would read. And then it came to the part where I, was telling what really happened. And of course, I saved that chapter last because I didn't want him to read it. I was so, really ashamed. And when he read that, we had a conversation, and his healing journey really began right then and there. And I saw how devastated he was. I was kind of surprised because I thought, well, you're a man. what's the deal? What do you, why are you so emotional and so why is this hitting you so hard? I didn't, again, I didn't realize how much of an impact it makes on men and men who have had, you know, the experience of abortion through their wives, girlfriends, or whatever.
And for him to see how you felt, I'm sure was an eye opener for him.
Oh my gosh, I'm telling you, these last 3 years we've been turned inside out. Like, honestly, not that it's a bad thing, it's a good thing because you grow and you get out, you come out on the other side and you're able to minister to others. You know, that's the beauty of it. Through all the hard stuff, the good things come. And so, anyway, he went through the study. I saw how devastated he was and was really having a hard time with it. You know, weeks go by and it's like the same thing, just kind of this low level sort of sadness. And I'd say, what's going on? He said, I just feel sad, you know, and he later on wrote a letter himself and I did a painting for him. And I said, I think maybe you need some support. So I called and they connected him with Jim, who was actually one of the guys that I guess they were, when they were rewriting the Reclaiming Fatherhood, Jim was one of the guys that was, you know, he had some input in, you know, redoing that book. I'm sorry, Jim, I don't know your last name, but I know you live on the East Coast. But anyway, my husband got so much out of it and he immediately was like, I want to help other men. And so, like I say, we do that occasionally because, you know, men still find it hard to come forward. But
Can you tell us a little bit about, as leaders, we're helping women through this study. Of course, I know some of us may be interested in having it done for ourselves as well, the painting. But tell us a little bit about the role of being able to visualize. How is that ministering to women and healing to have this customized painting done just based on your story. Tell us about the component. I mean, we tend to, in our culture, think of everything black and white, Bible verses, all of this. But talk about the creative aspect of that healing process.
Okay. So we call this the tribute project. It's that arm of Poly Lunetto Ministries. And so we started offering that because as the letter ladies and men send their letters in, like I said, the Holy Spirit just works through me during that process. So I always will read the letter. I sit with it for a while. Sometimes I sit with it for days. Sometimes it could be weeks, and I'm just reading that letter. And I always ask that it's handwritten because to me it helps me connect with the person, and it's so personal to see their handwriting, their handwritten letter, and to read the word. So I'll sit with the letter and I just put my hand to the canvas and I just start working. And really, the Holy Spirit just works through that process. And so he will show me what to do. I paint and then I know when it's done. I work in abstract style because I found that sometimes if it's too literal, people get stuck in that. So I do the paintings in abstract style. And, you know, it is personalized for that particular person. There's always some sort of component that is significant to the person. And sometimes I know what it is, and sometimes they know what it is, you know. So I do the art piece and then I make a print of it and I send it to them as a copy, as a thank you. And so that they have something that is a tribute to their baby in heaven and they, you know, can put it on their wall or on their desk or, you know, whatever they'd like to do with it. But they do get a print from the original. And I will use that original to share at an art exhibit. And I just want to check in with you, Linda, because I want to make sure that I'm tracking with where you want to go.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Yeah. And to be able to put a picture to the words, I think is a powerful component, isn't it?
Yes,
It's a different part of our brain. I don't remember all the science of that, but in the healing process that I know we've had a couple other guests that have talked about art therapy and incorporating that, and it really touches some different emotions maybe than just words can.
And I guess to for clarification that I do the painting, the person doesn't do the painting. Sometimes that's the big misunderstanding is that they're going to do the painting. And I think that that's something typical that you would do in art therapy if you're working with someone or, just part of that process. But for this particular instance, I do the painting, and it's a response to their handwritten letters. And so yeah, it's very powerful. And I feel like, when they say okay to something like that, that they are giving them another level of like a permission to grieve, that it's okay to grieve. We see people respond in different ways. Sometimes it's somebody that had an abortion, but they've never told anybody. So it could be when I'm talking about when we're at shows and we're showing this exhibit somewhere or at a conference. People will connect with it for different reasons. Sometimes it's because they have an abortion and it's still a secret. And so they're sort of what they're getting out of it is, oh, okay, somebody else had an abortion. I'm not the only one. And they're telling about it. I can see their story here. I can read it. And they had courage. So maybe I could too. Sometimes we have people like Mindy. She had that experience and she participated because, maybe she was curious or, I want to be able to contribute to the bigger picture. Or sometimes we have people that think like, well, okay, I hear the statistics, but when they're seeing somebody's handwritten letter, it becomes real. It's not no longer a statistics. It's real.
Puts a face on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it really.
So when you do a display, you have the painting and then the letter next to it.
Yes, I
Okay.
do.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll share about
That's
that.
powerful.
So the tribute project is when the person writes the letter and I do the painting. Okay. Then with all those original paintings, I keep the original paintings and give them a print, like I said. But all those originals, we have begun traveling with them. And so we'll take these to different life-affirming conferences, fundraisers, pregnancy center fundraisers, conferences, church events, things like that, where people, okay, let's say it's a pregnancy center and they have their yearly gala and they are raising money. Well, we'll have our exhibit there. And people are able to see the art piece, which is non-threatening. It's not like we're holding our Bible and say, we have some scriptures for you. It's an art piece, so people are drawn to it. Then, as they get closer to the art piece, right above it is the handwritten letter. And if you go on my website, you'll see a picture of people that are lined up in front of each piece and just reading it. It becomes very quiet. People are just enthralled. It's almost like they are reading somebody's diary. That's kind of what it's like because it's so quiet and very somber. But yes, Linda, we take the exhibit to different locations, and it's very powerful. It's very impactful, and it's a perfect fit for these types of conferences if people are standing for life, if they are, just want some other element to sort of enhance the work that they are already doing.
Yeah. So I did participate in this because I wanted to see and be able to tell people what it was about. And I wanted to have you on and be able to tell people what it was about. And it was pretty cool because so art is not something that moves me. I like art. I like photography more than I like art. But And art is subjective to, I guess that's the right term, to what your interest is. And so I wasn't sure how I was going to respond to it, if I was even going to like it, if it was going to mean anything to me. I just wanted to see what you did, And she's Polly said to me, you can write one letter to each child, because I've had three children aborted, or you can write one letter to all three. And, I was so busy, I was like, I'm just going to write one to all three. And so she didn't know a lot about my story. She didn't know. In fact, there's a part of my story I just don't tell because it's not really relevant to anybody. And that's the part that when I'd gone through Forgiven and Set Free as an original study, when I came to work at the pregnancy center, I went through Surrendering the Secret, and they asked you to gather flowers. I guess it was for the memorial. I don't really remember. But I decided I wanted this time some flowers that I could keep and display, right? So I got some fake, silk flowers or whatever you want to call them to make it sound pretty. But I went to Joann's and picked up these really big ones. So these, I picked up three big, thick, probably 2 inch thick, 1.5 inch thick stalks of sunflower. Maybe it wasn't that thick. They just felt like it, of sunflowers. And then I got one for my daughter who's alive. And I thought I'll have these for, well, anyway, they ended up being cumbersome in the way. And then my place is small, no longer at the pregnancy center. And I'm like, I just have nowhere to put these things. So I got rid of them. But when I sent my letter into Polly and I got the piece back, initially I'm opening it up with my husband first and we're looking at it and just kind of taking it all in for a minute. And then it hit me. She drew a vase with three flowers in it, not knowing that about these flowers, And I was like, oh, there's my flowers back, So it's like, you didn't know, but those are my flowers. And so it was kind of like the Lord replacing those that I got rid of in a more
Wow.
concise way. So it was really sweet. And I just felt like, the Lord was working through you and
Yeah.
kind of giving my flowers back. So it was really precious.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, because we're talking to abortion recovery leaders who might want to,
Yes.
let their participants know about your ministry or get, somehow connect with you. Maybe they
Yeah.
want to maybe write have the ladies write the letters and send them, and then the leaders will send them in, and I don't know, maybe who knows what they want to do. But how does somebody go about connecting with you to get that letter written, and to, because you want it handwritten,
Yeah.
and get started on this process? And how much does it cost?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for those questions. Yes, ladies, leaders, facilitators, you are exactly who could help us grow this and make it very impactful because there's no one else to ask for these types of letters because no one else can understand what that process is like. So we really do aim our focus at people who are facilitators of these types of studies because the letter writing is part of the process for so many programs out there. So yes, please respond. I'll tell you how. You'll go to my website. You can go to thetributeproject.com and you'll see a tab there that says The Tribute Project, and there's a participation agreement form that needs to be signed. And that form, you'll say what study did you go through, what year, your children's names, and sort of the information that I need to create the piece. So it's very simple. It takes you right through it. So just go to the website, thetributeproject.com, and you will fill out the participation agreement and then get it over to us, and then I will create something for you. There's no charge for this. Our partners help us with this, and also the people who send the letters into us and receive a framed print back. Those people will contribute to our process of paying it forward, so that we can continue doing this. It's very extravagant what we send back, because it's framed, it's beautifully wrapped. Everything is done by hand. And so I feel like there's a lot of value in that, as far as, I mean, that's my perception. I love handmade, because it's so personal, and especially with a project like this. Yes, if facilitators, if you are writing a letter to their babies in heaven, and that's part of your process, if they feel comfortable, it would be, instead of having to do it two times, they could just make a copy of what they've already written and send it in to us. It's okay if it's a copy of it, but we do ask that it's handwritten just because people can identify with that a little more, understanding that that's a real person wrote this. And so yeah, that's really the only stipulation. We have two sizes available when you receive it. You can get a 12 by 12 back or a I think it's 6 by 6, but you have an option. But there's no charge to you, but we will ask for a donation after if you feel led to do that, so that we can pay it forward. And gosh, we would be glad to have you join us, because it's really the only way that we can grow it and really make an impact.
How many do you have so far?
We have 19 pieces that we show.
Okay.
And part of that is we had one woman that had not only her abortion, but she also had a miscarriage. And she asked, "Do you think it would be okay if I include the baby in heaven that, was miscarried?" And of course we say yes.
Oh,
And so
that's sweet.
we have that too. And sometimes when we work with a pregnancy center, they say somebody wants to participate that had a miscarriage. Would that be okay? And we say, of course, yes.
That's
But
awesome.
primarily it's abortion.
Now, is there a certain like length of letter that you want?
Yes, if it could be on a 5 by 7 or going landscape, so it would be 7 by 5, kind of like a greeting card, that would
Okay.
be ideal.
Okay.
Yeah, if it goes over, it's fine, but if you can use that format, all of that's on the website. It's very, very detailed.
Okay. Well, Polly, thank you so much for being with us. It was good to have you. Good to hear more about your ministry and what God is doing. And we can't wait to see how this grows.